Jesus.
Yellow light!
I'm walking here!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through this Friday. Get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable. We are reliable. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. We're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. Is CHOP finally done? No. The city of Seattle decided to cave after moving to remove some of the barriers and let police officers back into their precinct. We're going to talk with a plaintiff and attorney, Jacob Bozeman. He has just filed a federal lawsuit against Mayor Jenny Durkan, but also Governor Jay Inslee over what's going on at CHOP. Plus, it's Friday. Movie theaters around the country are starting to reopen, which means there's actual movies for us to review. We're going to get into the latest release by Jon Stewart. It's called Irresistible. Is it any good? Is it, in fact, irresistible? It's not! I'll give you a review in just a few moments. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? At home.
So I guess there was some kind of plan this morning, and we put plan in air quotes because it wasn't really a plan. It was just, it seemed like, hey, let's send out SDOT, Seattle Department of Transportation. Let's send them into the CHOP zone. Let's have them start to remove some of the barriers. Let's have them come in and start to clean up so we can finally get officers back into the East Precinct. However, the city of Seattle has no real leadership. In a lot of ways, Seattle as a government is like CHOP. The Seattle city government has no singular leader. Mayor Jenny Durkan is not that leader. You just have a bunch of activists and a variety of fringe and some not so fringe views trying desperately to push their agenda without much organization. You've got the folks like Mayor Jenny Durkan who are technically supposed to lead, but they don't. They don't have the support or the power because of a council that doesn't really like her direction. Then on the council itself, you have a bunch of different factions pushing different interests. And yes, they're all far to the left. They have a shared ideological goal, but they just don't all agree on how to get to wherever it is they're trying to get. Where they're trying to get, I still don't really know. On the one hand, you've got folks like Shama Sawant and Tammy Morales and Teresa Mosqueda. They're all about defunding the police. You've got one voice on there, maybe one voice, maybe two voices, who are a little less fringe on that topic, but not by a lot. And so they have their own set of infighting. It's very similar to what's going on in CHOP. Except in this case, you have literal politics involved. Mayor Jenny Durkan is terrified of taking a lead here because she doesn't want to face a far-left challenger. And so she thinks by placating these protesters and these activists, it might stop someone from stepping up and running against her. But that very clearly is not going to happen. She is going to face a far-left challenger, probably more than one. So she comes up with this tepid plan to dip your toes in the water of whether or not you can take back this area. And the second that they did, activists stepped up, said no, and guess what? Mayor Jenny Durkan was all like, oh, okay, I guess we tried. Hey, move those trucks. We're done here. We tried. It didn't work. No, I know I just sent you in just 45 minutes ago, but it's, yeah. No, just call it quits. No, I'll still pay you for the whole day. Don't worry. No, yeah, just let's go. Wrap it up. Come on. Wrap it up. It's basically what happened. There were activists there like Mark Anthony, member of the CHOP Council, telling Como TV, yeah, we're not going anywhere.
I'm not sure who's going and spreading these lies about us leaving, but as you can see, our tents are still pitched.
The tents are still pitched, indeed. Now, it's certainly not as large as it once was. It's not as large as it was before 4 shootings took place, leading to a 19-year-old shot and killed. It's clearly not the same as it was last week. And in a lot of ways, what happens later tonight and over the weekend is going to decide whether or not CHOP is going to be reignited, with people showing up with renewed energy trying to take this back. Renewed energy because maybe they see this as an opportunity to start fresh. Maybe they see the threat coming from Mayor Jenny Durkan and the officers trying to take back the East Precinct, and they step up and say, okay, let's give this one last shot. Or nothing will happen over the weekend and it will just continue to slowly die, but we still won't end up getting where we need to go. Because you have folks like Mayor Jenny Durkan who will give in to one or two or three protesters. But Mark Anthony understands that they need to get a little bit more organized. That's why they've got something called the CHOP Council.
So it's not a set leadership. It is a constantly rotating group because it is meant to be a council of representatives from the community.
Yeah, well, a lot of folks in the community are saying it's time to wrap it up. In fact, they've been saying that for a long time, and they're getting more and more comfortable saying it. Because for a long time, for about a week and a half, you had a lot of people who were telling folks off the record that this situation they're in is untenable and dangerous. But now they're speaking up. They're putting their name to their criticism in the form of lawsuits, in the form of radio interviews, in the form of TV interviews. And they're saying enough is enough. You've got people like David Lewis, who has emerged as one of the consistent faces, the consistent voices, as part of the activism at CHOP. He spoke with Cairo Radio.
You can always get to an answer. You can always get to a consensus. When I first started these marches, there were people who wanted to burn things and break things. And yet they understood the logic of communication and the logic of the bigger picture. And they still stand with us completely peaceful.
Completely peaceful? I mean, except for the murder, right? Completely peaceful, at CHOP at least, except for the shootings. Four in total over the course of just 3 days. Completely peaceful, except for the fact that you got a whole bunch of folks who get into fights all the time. All the time. In fact, a reporter was down there today who did not want me to use his name because he doesn't want to become the focal point of the story, which I understand. But he was there this morning as SDOT started to clean things up. And again, it didn't really go anywhere. They gave up. And as he was there covering what was happening at CHOP, he noticed a man with a bloody eyebrow going towards the medics at CHOP. And he was getting treated. Now, shortly after, we don't know who this man is. Perhaps he's coming after the dude with the bloody eyebrow. But a man with a rifle and a hammer showed up, started yelling. He cocked that rifle. He started to point it at people in that crowd. And so, of course, this reporter was trying to take video of everything that was going on. But what have we seen in the past when folks try to videotape the violence that activists are pretending don't actually happen? They get threatened. They get blocked. And that's what happened.
Well, dude, I'm a reporter, man.
I know, but you are not recording this.
Why?
Because I say so.
And who are you?
You don't want to mess around with this. We are not recording our medics for safety purposes.
I'm not recording your medics. I'm not recording your medics, sir. I'm recording the situation, and you know that.
And our medic is there. Therefore, you are recording the medics.
Okay.
It's
not illegal to record a medic.
Hey.
I'm just saying. I'm a reporter, and I'm away from the situation. I'm recording. I'm not going to deny it.
Don't do no bias recording, though.
I'm not recording.
Bro, we need to know.
You're recording right now.
I am right now.
Would you like to eat?
I know. Why can't I? I'm just curious.
Not
why?
Right here. You can't.
Yeah, and why not? I honestly just want to know why. I'll record this way.
So I'll let it finish, but I'll tell you why. I'll give you the why because I've experienced it personally. They do not want you to videotape any of the violence because this is all about winning a propaganda war. There are still national outlets that are giving the folks at CHOP cover for the violence. The Seattle Times is still cheerleading, essentially. The Stranger still cheerleading, essentially, for the CHOP. And it makes their job so much easier if there's not a whole bunch of video going around online that shows the kind of violence. And so when anything happens, even though they're using this as cover of, oh, we don't want you to see the medics, as if that is, what would happen if we saw the pretend people who are pretending, playing doctor? It's not MASH. not Grey's Anatomy. We have no idea who half these people are who claim to be quote-unquote medics. They're using that because they want to stop you from taking any clean footage that ends up going viral.
Sort of this way, I want to know why. Okay. I don't want to ask a situation. Yeah, of course not.
So their person.
And I'm sorry, your name,
Sure. Steven.
Okay, Steven.
There was a party, I'm not even going to name them because they don't need to be named, that was anti what is going on here.
Okay.
And they came and they shot fire here. So now we are.
I know, it's tense.
Sleep deprived.
I don't want to escalate anything. It's already tense over there. I get it, man.
So right now.
But you also want to have to understand, sir.
Right now, we're trying to handle civil disputes even within each other in the community.
Civil disputes. The man has a gun and a hammer in his hand and he's tense.
Hey, but when we had white guys here at the time that had guns in his hand, too.
And what happened?
So I tried to tell them, sleep as much as you can.
You have to understand, also, from the community's perspective.
Don't even use it.
I just want to tell you.
Unless absolutely you had to, but don't even use it. Keep it somewhere outside of your hand. Maybe on top of a building or something.
Okay.
Keep it somewhere where it could actually save us. Not be a detrimental to us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Sir. We're trying to keep the need of peace.
They're de-escalating, Peyton.
All right. It's tense out here. People are trying to de-escalate.
Yeah, they're de-escalating. Does this sound peaceful and safe, or does this sound like we're going to, God forbid, have to deal with another shooting? Does this sound safe, or do you think that maybe, just maybe, it's spiraling even more out of control? Meanwhile, Jenny Durkin does literally nothing. She said it's time to clean up. We're now 5 days later. She tried once, kinda, and quickly gave up. Good for you. That's leadership, huh? That's a Seattle way. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday, and you know what that means. Although we haven't done it in a long time, but we've got movie theaters around the country reopening, and that means more movies are actually coming out, and that means I get to talk movies. This time, it's on demand for us here in Washington State. It's a movie called Irresistible. It's a new film written and directed by former Daily Show host Jon Stewart. It tackles a small town mayoral race in Deerlocken, Wisconsin, right after the loss of Hillary Clinton to Donald Trump. The DNC is saying, what did we do wrong? So Steve Carell plays a DNC strategist who convinces a retired veteran to run for mayor so that the Democrats could maybe have a better chance at winning the next national election in small town America.
We can't win unless it turns out that this town isn't the Mayberry everybody thinks it is.
We were the good guys, right?
Yeah, we're the good guys.
When they go low,
we go high.
Unless we also need to go low, apparently.
Only to keep those who would go lower out of power.
So when they go low, we go higher incrementally in relation to how low they went.
Regrettably, yes.
When they go low, we go almost as low, but we feel worse doing it.
But when the Republicans figure out what Steve Carell's character is doing, they send their own chief strategist, played by Rose Byrne, to help bolster the incumbent's chances of winning.
Faith?
Gary.
You seem to be doing a brisk business. Deerlocken always. So apparently Deerlocken Uberalis was copyrighted.
Well, we were going to go with I'm with him until we remembered how stupid it sounded.
No. I love it. I love the whole town genealogy angle. It's got a real bold, you ain't from around here flavor. The subtle notes of xenophobia. Not to mention the cognitive dissonance that your booth is basically a love letter to immigration.
That's a great observation. So all these people are hypocrites? I'd run with that.
All you have is fear.
Now we're getting somewhere. $20 says I do better with fear than you do with shame.
Oh, okay. 30 years. You really think you can run a campaign that paints them as a carpetbagger?
Probably not, but I think I can run one that says you are.
Unfortunately, Irresistible is quite the opposite of its title. Its writing is lazy and relatively lifeless. This is a satire that doesn't seem to remember what it's satirizing. There are moments where I guess it's amusing when the movie decides to tackle some of the obvious places you can mock on both sides, when the white DNC activist has to walk on eggshells scared they might offend someone who happens to be black. But it plays into every stereotype imaginable on both sides throughout the entire movie, and it ends up just becoming an uninspired bore, a slog. And not just boring, but condescending. And I'm pretty sure that the condescending aspect of this movie was unintentional. This is a comedy, in air quotes. It's a comedy with almost no laughs. Yeah, you'll chuckle at times, but that's kind of about it. And it ends with this twist ending that is so contrived, I ended up getting rather angry at the movie itself. Irresistible is a bland mess. And at a time when we're all thirsty for entertainment as the theaters are starting to reopen, it's especially disappointing. Irresistible is out right now on demand here in Washington State, and I am a huge pass on this movie. If you want to see a good political satire, watch the movie Wag the Dog. If you're looking for something a little bit more serious, check out the movies Deterrence or The Contender. Both I would recommend over Irresistible. I am not a fan of this. So what are you going to do this weekend? Are you going to go on demand? Are you dipping into the Netflix queue? Or are you just going to go outside and enjoy all of the rain? 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So today is the first day of the mandatory mask order, though it's not going to actually be enforced unless you are essentially asking for it to be enforced. Now, not everyone wants to wear masks. I know a lot of people who are listening right now resent the idea that they are going to be forced into this position. But there are also some folks who realize they can't really get someone to wear a mask, especially parents who have got kids. But of the kids who are out there of various ages, there are kids who have autism, who have sensory sensitivities. And it's especially difficult for those kids and for those parents to keep the mask on their kids. Lacey, who lives in Auburn, spoke with King 5 about the difficulty of getting her daughter, who has autism, keeping a mask on.
It's not just that it's irritating or uncomfortable. It can be painful. Like, it can cause them physical pain to have, you know, fabric in areas of their body that they're not used to, or these straps behind their ears that they can feel.
So the state is essentially pointing out right now that in cases where you literally cannot wear a mask because of a medical issue, and this is a legitimate case, they're going to give you a pass. But they're also saying there are some homemade facial mask exemption cards that are circulating online that are totally illegitimate, which a lot of people already know, and won't protect you if you are in one of those positions where, God forbid, an officer or someone from law enforcement is going to try to ticket you for not wearing your mask. Now, according to this card, it says under the Americans with Disability, and it's spelled wrong, Act, I am not required to disclose my condition to you. And it says on this imaginary an imaginary group, an agency called the Freedom to Breathe Agency, which to me makes it more satirical. But some people are trying to use it as if they're going to show it to, you know, the business that you're going into. Like, see, I don't have to wear my mask. It's not actually going to work. But for Lacey, she's all like, look, I mean, I've got a kid who literally can't wear it because of a medical issue. Can you not pretend that you have a medical issue? Because it's kind of disrespectful to the folks who actually do have a legitimate reason. And all you're doing when you pretend to be sick, you're making it hard for the people who legitimately are either dealing with an illness or dealing with a medical issue or dealing with a legitimate reason why they can't actually wear that mask.
It's definitely frustrating because those laws are in place to protect people who actually need them. And it's frustrating for a family like mine who is doing everything we possibly can to keep our daughter safe, including literally not taking her anywhere for the last 4 months. So to hear that people are taking advantage of that is, it definitely makes my blood boil a little bit.
I partially agree. Obviously, I don't have the same connection as someone in my life who's dealing with a legitimate issue that they can't wear a mask. But again, don't be that person. Don't be that dude. Don't be that lady. I understand if you don't want to wear a mask. And if you want to engage in civil disobedience, you get to do that. But the disobedience part means you might potentially get punished. You are not brave. You're not taking a moral stand by lying about why you're not wearing a mask. You can take a moral stand, a principled position, and be honest. Say, I do not believe that the state has the right to force me to wear a mask. If that's what you believe, then say it and take that position. You get to do that as a free citizen. But at least that's a principled position. At least that is an ethical position to take. It is not ethical. It is not moral. It is not brave when you pretend that you've got some kind of illness or medical condition that prevents you from wearing a mask. It's so reprehensible, anyone who would pretend but then wants a pat on the back for their activism. That's not how it works. Again, I don't care whether or not you want to engage in civil disobedience. That is your right. All I'm saying is don't lie about it. And understand one thing in all of this. Businesses are going to be forced to comply. Whether they want to or not, the vast majority of the businesses, as we start to reopen this economy, are going to have to comply with these rules. Because they know if they don't, they face significant pushback and penalties from the state of Washington. So one thing you guys need to figure out, if you're not on board wearing the mask, a position, again, I understand. Figure out if you're going to help out businesses that are in need right now. The businesses in Sultan and Snohomish and University Place and Spokane and Seattle. You're either going to help them when they're in need and abide by the rules so that they can actually invite you into their store, or you're going to stay home. You're not going to wear the mask out of principle, and these businesses are going to hurt at a time where they need a lot of help. And I'll tell you this, the best form of activism right now for anyone who's upset about the mask or really upset about any of the pandemic policies, the best form of activism is voting and beating Jay Inslee come November. That is the best way to show your activism. Tell him ultimately your policies were so bad, they were so dangerous, they were so inconsistent, we are putting you out of office. We are putting you out of a job. That's activism in its best form. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to talk to a plaintiff who actually happens to also be the lawyer, as he is suing in federal court the city of Seattle and the state of Washington all over CHOP. We're going to get into that when we come back on The Jason Rancho. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Another day, another lawsuit. This one, a federal lawsuit filed over CHOP against Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan and Governor Jay Inslee. Joining me on the line to discuss is both the plaintiff, who is also the attorney, Jacob Bozeman. Jacob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason.
So take us through the lawsuit.
I filed a federal lawsuit against Jenny Durkan, the city of Seattle, Governor Jay Inslee in the state of Washington, basically regarding the unconstitutional taking over by a group of persons over a portion of the city of Seattle. The suit asks for a declaratory judgment that the 1st, 4th, and 14th Amendments of the Constitution are being breached by the actions and orders of the executives here in charge, Jenny Durkan for the city of Seattle and Governor Jay Inslee for Washington, by allowing a group to take over a portion of the Seattle that's just in favor of one special interest group as opposed to the rest of the citizens. I don't believe anyone prior to the CHOP-CHAZ takeover would ever believe it to be appropriate for the executives of the city and the executive of the state to allow one political or special interest group to take over a portion of an American city, as opposed to the rest of the citizens and their right to for free speech and assembly, for their right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures of their person and their property, or to be provided equal protection of the law. In this particular case, for what Seattle has done, is they've facilitated the takeover with certain services, with the concrete blocks, and more importantly, they've abdicated their police power and law enforcement authority to protect any other citizen who might want to be protected by the police from a very well-founded belief that they might be violently attacked mm-hmm. or assaulted should they speak their mind or promote any other agenda that might be going on. And again, we're talking about an unelected, unauthorized, armed, and dangerous group of people who are being allowed to say who comes, who goes, under what conditions, a proportion of the city. That's essentially the essence of it. It does ask for cost and damages, but essentially it's only about a declaratory judgment by the federal court to state that unconstitutional action is being taken by the city yeah. and these executives, and asking that an injunction be issued for any further orders assisting in that kind of a takeover, yeah. Just to stop those actions.
Got it. And that seems straightforward. And any reasonable person would take the exact same position. Now, yesterday, we spoke with a business owner. He's one of many businesses and property owners there who are suing because they are directly impacted. They're in and around the CHOP zone. I know that at least your attorney's office is located in Lynnwood. Do you live in the area?
I am a citizen. I live in Seattle, Washington. My son lives in the Lynnwood area. My office is in Lynnwood.
So So your point is not necessarily that you've been a personal victim as someone who lives in the area, but you have standing just as a resident here because you're not able to access the area the way you would normally.
That's exactly correct, and I'm not representing any of the business owners. I noticed that they've simply sued the city
yeah.
and wrote a strongly worded letter to Jenny Durkin. I don't think they've looked at the state responsibility or Governor Inslee's responsibility for imposing control over a city if it won't do so itself. But yes, it's simply, and I don't know what the value of this would be. It is filed as a class action so that anyone who feels that their rights to go through the city, to go through portions of the city without an undue fear of violence against them, and to free speech and assembly of their own, and to be free from any unreasonable searches and seizures by an unelected, unauthorized group of people, as opposed to the police, can do that. I don't put any monetary value on it. I'm not looking for money for it, but I want this never to happen again in yeah. Seattle, and I don't think it should ever happen again in any other American city. I noticed that it's taking over in other areas, and I think it's a terrible precedent and just a horrible example of a group of political executives who are not putting the shoe on the other foot. I know it's almost become a cliche from what I've been hearing on the news, but what would have happened if red MAGA wearing hat citizens with Armalite rifles decided to take over the Space Needle at some point? It would be a completely different story.
Well, and for consistency, Jacob, what should be the case? So let's say that it is a bunch of MAGA hat wearing folks who decide to take over the same area. What should the response be?
I do understand that there is some value and some care does have to be taken on behalf of the executives when persons are freely and lawfully assembling for free speech purposes, etc., and that you don't want to go directly to violence or direct confrontation with the police. But we've all seen how this has been more than that. This has mm-hmm. been a complete abdication on the part of the mayor and the state of all of its police and authority within a certain
your position,
a certain area of the
just so I'm clear, your position is if it was if the CHOP residents right now are all conservatives, you would still take the same position of you can't allow for this to happen, you got to clean it up.
Absolutely. Nobody can disagree, I don't think reasonably, that any political group or special interest group should be allowed to take over any portion of an American city. And if you get to, well, it's only a little portion, then you're arguing, well, how much is enough? How much is too much? What's important? Are there yeah. certain areas that we can just abdicate this? And I'm here to say, I don't think it's a huge legal step to say that the Constitution doesn't allow the government to abdicate its authority for freedom of speech, deprivation of your liberty or property or equal protection under the laws to one group of people over any other. It's a horrible idea.
Is it too far gone at this point as far as the lawsuit being filed, obviously? But obviously early this morning, Seattle's mayor tried to move in and take over. It didn't quite work. In fact, everyone was kind of rushed out of the area because activists didn't want to give up the CHOP or the East Precinct. If the city was making from the beginning, if they were making good faith efforts to get this under control, would that have prevented this lawsuit from being filed?
No, it wouldn't, because I watch the news every day, and that's part of this lawsuit is simply a reaction to I can't believe anybody would agree that this should ever happen again, and nobody really seemed to be doing anything. I watched Jenny Durkin's newscast earlier this week. It went on for about 45 minutes regarding racial injustice, systemic inequity, and I caught about one sentence where she said, "It's time for them to go. The cumulative effect of the CHAZ is hurting people. It's time for them to go." No promises, nothing about the future.
Yeah.
And here's the real point to this. Seattle has become a city that doesn't, there's no riot it doesn't like. There's no political march it doesn't like. There's holidays specifically for it where we all seem to know what's going to happen. It's going to be a free-for-all. It was, again, and it's lasted quite a long time, even though, quite honestly, the protesters seem to have gotten everything they want, but they keep changing the goalposts. But that being aside, no political special interest group of any side should be able to take over and decide who comes and goes and does what
totally.
And under what conditions and safety. The abdication of that rule and the abandonment of the police station can't be allowed to happen again. I'm not asking the federal court to tell these executives that you must make orders. It's more of a negative reference in you shall not make any further orders that facilitate this by happening, by providing barriers, by abandoning the police station, by providing taxpayer or subsidized
yep.
health, sanitation, or cleanup. That very much allowed these people to come in and take over and do that and to tell the police. I don't have the absolute proof of it yet at this point in the lawsuit, but I think we're going to find that there were definitely orders where Jenny Durkin told the police to vacate the precinct and also
she's acknowledged
not
that part.
To go within the borders of CHAZ.
Yeah, I mean, she's certainly on the first part. She's already acknowledged that. We'll see what they've actually put in writing behind the scenes as they dealt with this. We've been talking with Jacob Bozeman, a lawyer and the plaintiff in what may end up becoming a massive class action lawsuit against both the city of Seattle and the state of Washington for abdicating their duties and essentially giving over a portion of the city to activists who have called it CHOP or CHAZ. Jacob, we wish you the best of luck in this lawsuit. It's a reasonable position that you're taking, and we hope you keep us up to date as to how this progresses. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. By the way, I'll be talking about this and all of the other efforts to try to get CHOP under control later tonight at 8 o'clock on Fox News at Night with Shannon Bream. So if you are available, we would love it if you would watch it. And if you can't catch it, we'll have the video up at facebook.com/Jason Rant Show. If you didn't think the Washington State unemployment scandal could get worse, oh, just stick around in 3 minutes. I'll tell you how it has right here on KTTH. To the Jason Rand Show. We're live on this Friday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a podcast subscriber. Oh, you're not? Well, shame on you. Good thing I don't judge people.
Yeah, you never judge a soul.
I never judge anybody.
Except for our non-podcast subscribers.
Except for people who choose not to subscribe to the podcast. But I've made it easy for you to subscribe. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770. The more of you who subscribe, the better it is this show can grow. Can't do it without you. The Washington unemployment debacle has gotten even worse than you could possibly have imagined. And if you're saying to yourself, well, Jason, how could it actually get worse? We've got people, tens of thousands of people, 88,000, I think, at last count, who still haven't even received their first unemployment check. And we've been dealing with this since March. How could it get any worse than that? Well, let me tell you. ESD, the Employment Security Department, in their investigation into the scams, the fraud, they're basically causing banks to freeze people out of their own accounts. So not only are they not paying these folks the money that they are owed, and in some cases desperately need, ESD is now unintentionally causing bank accounts to freeze up. Thousands of Washingtonians, according to King 5, are dealing with this particular issue, and apparently it's been going on for a few weeks now. Chuck Ritchie told King 5 that he was receiving his unemployment benefits. He was one of the lucky people who actually got their money. But then all of a sudden, bam, it stopped. Stopped in mid-May as the ESD was going through with their fraud investigation. But recently, the situation took a rather dark turn.
This is the opposite of helping. It's not like they're just denying me payments. They actually took my money and locked me out of my account. So it's frustrating, and it really makes you mad.
Yeah, the banks get triggered on suspicious activity when the ESD is looking into the claims, apparently. There's some stuff that's going on in the back end. You can't necessarily blame the banks because it's all triggered automatically. Shauna De La Rosa, a furloughed reporter from Gig Harbor, she's one of the thousands of people who are locked out, like Chuck. She's not getting her unemployment payments, and she's also not able to get into her bank account. She received three weekly payments, according to our sister station, Cairo Radio, before the account was completely locked in early June. Since then, oh, hey, she hasn't received a payment. So that's like 3.5 weeks. And of course, she's heard literally nothing about when those payments will come back again.
They sent me an email and said I had a deadline of sending in my stuff by June 19th, but I couldn't even get into my account to upload anything.
Okay, of course. If you want your money, you have to now go through this extra hoop that we're not even going to allow you to go through because your account doesn't work. So obviously, she's not been able to jump through that extra hoop.
Their housekeepers at hotels, their bartenders, they really don't have any backup. They don't have any help, and they're not getting any answers. And it is absolutely devastating that so many people are not able to feed their families.
What's devastating is that the state of Washington, for one, is pretending this is not a scandal, and they're pretending it's not a scandal because it's political. Governor Jay Inslee is running for re-election. This would not be the first department that he hasn't been able to rein in control of. He's got plenty of scandals from the Department of Corrections illegally releasing bad guys into the public because of a back-end calculation that was wrong that told people to be released earlier than they were supposed to, and some of those people, either two or three, and this was before the coronavirus, this was a few years ago, two or three, I believe, ended up committing murders or were suspected of it. Then you of course have the hospital situation with Western State Hospital losing their accreditation, losing tens of millions of financial aid because they couldn't get their act together, and now you have ESD. But he's pretending it's not that big of a deal. Has he fired anyone for it? Because I know Susie Levine, the commissioner of ESD, she still got a job. And she told King 5, like, yeah, I'm aware that this is happening, but it's not that, it's just a small number of people who are dealing with it. So then King 5 was all like, okay, what can people do if they're locked out of their accounts? What could they actually do?
So I'm not going to provide a roadmap for the criminals to our actions, but I can share. We have confirmed a small number of cases where this is happening. And we have a process to resolve the issue between the customer and their bank when it is a legitimate claim. And that's really important to stay there, when it is a legitimate claim.
So why can't Chuck get help or Shauna De La Rosa get help? So the question is, can you give us some details on how people who are out there can move forward? No, I can't. But we have a plan. We have a plan, I promise. Okay, got it. How does she still have a job? Seriously, how does she still have a job? She very clearly doesn't know what it is she's doing. And in a lot of ways, I don't necessarily blame her for not knowing what she's doing. She got a cushy job because she's a big donor to the Democratic Party. I do blame her for staying on the job that she's very clearly unqualified for. I blame her for staying in a position that she knows she's not able to handle at a time where we need someone who knows what the heck it is they're doing to get people their money. You have folks right now barely scraping by. Barely scraping by. Luckily, the economy is starting to reopen, but it's reopening slowly. People still don't have the hours they once had. They're still not getting the pay that they once had. And all they're asking for is the help that the state has guaranteed them from a budget that they paid into. And Susie Levine, rather than saying, you know what, this happened under my watch, I apologize. And not only do I apologize, I understand how important this is to people who are scraping by, barely. I'm going to step down and I'm going to allow someone to take this position who knows what it is he or she is doing. I blame Governor Jay Inslee for allowing this to go on so long. And in large part, I blame portions of the media for not putting more attention on it. Kudos to King 5 and Cairo Radio for covering it today and yesterday. Thank you. Q13 had a story the other day as well. That's awesome. But isn't this the kind of story that needs to be discussed every single day? Isn't this something that we all should be putting a lot more pressure on the administration over? Isn't this something that everyone should be outraged by? Where's the weekly editorial in the Spokesman Review, or the Tacoma News Tribune, or the Seattle Times? Where are the reporters who get to ask questions of Governor Jay Inslee? Where are they pushing for more answers? Where are they demanding follow-ups to questions that he refuses to answer? And how do we find it acceptable that while this is happening and we've given Washington State Guardsmen, National Guardsmen, to help out, why is it that this month and into what, July 2nd, they're taking less phone calls at ESD as people are desperate to figure out a situation where they can get their money? How is any of this acceptable? It's 2020. We live in Washington State where we have an incredibly strong industry of technology, and we've got a system that apparently not only is easy to break, but easy to fraud. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text message. Trader Joe's employees have a list of demands.